I'm Isa Ali. Brits of Iranian heritage. In recent years, British-Iranian tensions have risen to great levels. The media portrayal of Iran in the media tends to be negative, with Iran regularly accused of extremism. Iranians, meanwhile, view the British as an imperial power who's determined to impose their domination over the country once again. I decided to try to get to the bottom of this relationship between the two countries by speaking to the leading academics and experts in order that I may not be influenced by the sensationalism of the mainstream media. It's important in any discussion to look back into the history in order to gain an understanding of the modern day relationship. The English were amongst the first Europeans to arrive in Iran during the Mughal era.
Our relation with Britain started go back to Edward III in 13th century. And the missionary entered to Persia to deal with the Ilkhanide dynasty of the Mughal dynasty.
The first Europeans that arrived in Iran in the Islamic period were William Robrecht, Marco Polo, Marino Sanota, and the priest Odrich Perthanen. How Iran's relations were made with the European states should be sought in the Mughal era. With the defeat of Islamic countries by the Mughals in 13th century AD, Europe renewed its interest in the Orient, and the dress code which separated Iran and the Islamic countries from the Western world for a long time was removed.
I've just met with Dr. Charles Melville at Cambridge, who has really given me an insight into the history of British-Qajar relationships, which I quite frankly wasn't expecting. He was very frank in his criticism of some of Britain's policies over the last 200 years, in particular Britain's unquestioning following of American policy in the recent decades.
I think probably formally these go back to the Safavid period, but if you really want to stretch the record back, you'd have to take account of some of the Mongol Ilkhans who were sending letters to the princes in Europe. Edward III, I think, got some letters just asking for alliances and so on. But nothing really came of these, of course, because the distances were enormous. And there was one or two, I think one British man called Ashby, or someone of Ashby, actually made it more or less out to the Ilkhan's court, but there was no serious long-term relationship.
In 1278, a delegation from the Pope, consisting of Catholic missionaries, was sent to the city of Tabriz in northwestern Iran in order to spread the Christian religion there.
The Ottomans, Iran's eastern neighbor, were hostile to Iran and European countries. In 1404 AD, Tamerlane, after his victory over Bayezid, sent staff to Venice, Genoa, London, and Paris so the people there would hear the news of his victory over the Ottomans.
Later, the Mughal ruler and founder of the Timurid dynasty, Tamerlane, had taken steps towards building relationships with Britain, sending Charles VI letters calling for Britain to send traders to the east. In the second half of the 16th century, in England, steps were being taken to establish relations with Iran, following reports by English and Portuguese travellers of the romantic beauty of Iran.
Henry IV and Charlie VI responded to Tamerlane's representatives, and Henry III, the King of Castile and Leon, sent Roy González de Clavijo to Samarkand in response to Tamerlane. Reports about Iran had been sent to England in the 13th century. The reports were about two priests, Franciscan and Dominican, who had passed through Iran on their way to China. And so it became popular in England that Iran was a romantic yet inaccessible country. In the middle of the 16th century, in the book The Travels of Sir John Mandeville, the writer reveals that China and Iran were countries in the Orient that were further than Saudi Arabia, Habashah, which is today's Yemen, and India. The myth of Iran, which was written by Mandeville, was based on reports by medieval travelers like Marco Polo. And the reports by Marco Polo were based on his travels to France in 1556 and to England in 1579, which were available for everyone.
For 5 years in the 1580s, Britain and Spain were fighting naval wars. And it was during this time that four British explorers named Ralph Fitch, John Newbery, William Leeds, and James Story were trading in the East. These travellers went from Tripoli to the Persian Gulf, through Basra and Baghdad, ending up on the island of Hormuz.
In order to get a better understanding of the Qajar period in Persia, I've come to Cambridge to interview Dr. Roxana Farman Farmian, who is a professor at the University of Cambridge and is also a descendant of the Qajar dynasty.
Well, I think the British certainly were a sea power and had taken over very much the region of the southern Arabian Sea, their interest in India, which of course they got as a province that was handed over after the 30 Years' War from France. It was one of the spoils of war. And of course that developed as a relationship, and all of the countries that border the coastal areas along the waterways between Britain and India became very important.
The Portuguese, in competition with the British at this time, were spying on these businessmen, trying to keep an eye on their every action. As a result, the four of them were all arrested and sent to a prison in the Gulf. Whilst in prison, Ralph Fitch wrote a book about the stories of his journey. His book was amongst the first descriptions of the East and the Iranian people in general that the British people had ever read, and following his release, he published the book. However, the most important part of British-Iranian relations were established during the Safavid period.
So really it would be the Safavid period, that's the 16th century. And relations started fairly early on because, of course, the thing about the Safavids were they were the enemies of the Ottomans, and the Ottoman Empire was a great problem in Europe. And there was a lot of interest, therefore, in Persia, as it was mainly called in those days. And this attracted travellers, not just from Britain, actually, probably we were rather behind the Central Europeans. It was partly motivated on our side by a desire for trade. So you had people like Anthony Jenkinson. They were all trying to find a route to the east.
Even further, during the Safavid period, especially during the Shah Abbas the Great period, the Shirley's brother came to Iran and to modernize the Iranian army of the Safavid period to expel the invasion of the Portuguese on Persian Gulf in the Hormuz area. They built a castle and so on. They were basically interfering into the occupying that area toward the Indian Ocean. And it was necessary for Iran to have a strong army force to expel them. And they succeeded during the Shah Abbas the Great. And these Sayyid envoy and missionary just interrupted for during the period of the Afshar dynasty.
These relationships were made because of political and economic reasons, and even because of the competition with Spain and Portugal. It was then when the governments of Spain and Portugal, on an official order by Alexander VI, divided the world between themselves, and so the foundations of their colonial empires in America, Africa, and Asia were laid. The English government was under the reign of Queen Elizabeth I and was also trying to build its own colonial rule. Considering that the African and Asian seaways were available to the Portuguese, the English were determined to open a way into Asia from the waterways of Northern Europe and Russian territory. And therefore, the English succeeded to get permission from Ivan IV, known as the Terrible Tsar of Moscow, to establish a company called the Moscow Trading Company in 1553.
We're on our way to interview Dr. Edmund Herzig, who's a professor at the University of Oxford on Middle Eastern studies, and he's an expert on the Qajar period in Iran. And hopefully we're going to get some of the answers to our questions and try to get a better understanding of Britain's role and the imperialistic role in Iran during the Qajar period.
So really this
dates back to the Safavid period, to the 16th century, and then particularly to the 17th century and the reign of Shah Abbas I. And it's in that era that the British first, you know, send diplomats to Iran.
In the era of Shah Abbas in 1598, an English army came to Iran to help them with some of their military operations, with the famous Shirley brothers coming to help train the army of the Shah. During the 17th and 18th centuries, however, Britain's role in Iran became primarily of a commercial nature.
The East India Company first begins to trade to Iran directly, going, you know, sailing around the Cape and reaching Iran via the Indian Ocean. The Muscovy Company also starts to send agents to Iran as early as the 16th century, coming through Russia and the Caspian Sea. So, you know, the Qajar period, although it's the era in which Anglo-Iranian relations first find any kind of intensity,
now I'm on my way to interview John Malcolm, who is coming down from Scotland. He's getting ready to catch a flight from Heathrow to Australia, where he's going to be promoting his book on Sir John Malcolm, who was his ancestor and who was a prominent diplomat from the Qajar period to Iran. And his book is really going to explain a lot about British-Iranian relations at that time.
It was part of the deal that they made, which was they would provide military advisors. This was the 1889 alliance or treaty. And they did, in fact, stay there right through till 1850s, I think. I think the last one's going. They helped them in their war with the Russians. And they had a few officers and a few sergeants drilling the troops and so on. So they were around, but they weren't. It wasn't in a very big way. It was quite small.
You know, the East India Company helped Shah Abbas take Hormuz back from the Portuguese in the early 17th century. So there was a significant level of relations in the 17th century. And then in the 18th century, after the collapse of the Safavid dynasty, when Iran became, you know, quite fragmented and chaotic for most of that century, those relations effectively came to an end, or at least you know, lost that sort of level of intensity and significance that they'd had in the 17th century. Then, with the establishment of the Qajar dynasty, the British again start to get interested in Iran. They're taking note of the, you know, establishment of a new government that looks more stable, more capable of governing the entire territory of Iran. And they, you know, again renew their interest in Iran by sending envoys, and after a little while by establishing an embassy.
I mean, Abbas wanted to negotiate with Spain and with the major European powers, because again the Ottomans were still there, and in the 17th century this was the major rivalry, and so the European interest was finding an alliance against the Ottoman Turks. And Shah Abbas, a bit like the British actually, was very interested in trade as well, so he wanted to find outlets for his silk.
In the early 19th century, Iran was seen as a bridge to India and the British Empire's hold there. India at the time was the jewel in the British Empire's crown. Therefore, to secure Iran meant to secure the future of India.
Well, from the British point of view, in the early Qajar period, the reign of Fath Ali Shah, what concerns the British most going into the 19th century is the threat posed by Napoleon. And Napoleon sends an embassy trying to cultivate good relations with the Shah. The British, who've already had some contact, respond and essentially try to outbid the French in terms of winning the Iranians favour in order to gain influence and ensure that the Iranians would not cooperate with any French plans.
Some Brits might have hoped that they could deal with Persia in the way that the princely states in India, they dealt with them. In other words, they would help them, but they would also sort of run their foreign affairs. They might, some of them, but they never that was never implemented at all. I don't think, honestly, that the British in India were remotely interested in Persia as such, other than they were interested in its position.
The British have got a number of interests, which are mainly, I suppose, we could describe them as political strategic interests. So there's no very significant commercial interest on the part of Great Britain in Iran at this time, but there are very significant strategic ones, and those are really the interests that I think remain the predominant interests, at least in the eyes of the British government and Whitehall, throughout the Qajar period. And they have to do with, on the one hand, balance of power in Europe, and on the other hand, with Britain's position in India and safeguarding that against possible threats. In the early 19th century, it's really the threat from France that first encourages the British to become closely involved in Iran again, and to send envoys and try to cultivate relations with the Qajar court. There's an anxiety that Napoleon, after he's reached Egypt, will try to send an army overland to threaten British possessions in India. And of course, it's only, you know, 50 or a little more than 50 years previously that the British and the French have been fighting for control in India, and the British emerged victorious. So on the one hand, that's a very important interest for the British, and as much of Iran's as much of Britain's Iran policy is actually managed, funded, organised, directed from the British authority in India. In fact, that strategic interest coming from defence of India concern, we can broadly consider sort of defence of India concerns, often appears to be the dominant, or at least one of the dominant strands in British policy towards Iran through the 19th century and into the early 20th century.
John Malcolm was a political, military and diplomatic official of the British Empire. He insisted that the British Navy should settle in Keshm Island in the Persian Gulf. This decision created much opposition amongst many Iranians. He negotiated a treaty whereby commerce and business between both countries would be free and open.
Partly British interests in India, but also rivalries in Europe as much as anything that really got it going. And again, it was the French, actually, because I mean, we're at the beginning of the Qajar period. It's sort of 1790s, 1797, when Aga Muhammad Shah became officially ruler of Iran. And of course, this coincides almost exactly with the French Revolution and, you know, the sort of French expansion and their relations with Russia and their relations with England. And so the French were actually looking to attack British interests in the East, which would include Egypt and India and sort of the British Empire that way. And so one way of getting at them was through Iran. And so the French actually started off with missions, and then the British very quickly responded.
It was in that context, really, that the British were competing with the French to try to offer the Iranians something of what they wanted. And they were conscious at that time, or at least there, you know, there were some in Iran who were conscious of the need to try to modernize the army, to begin to be able to compete or to match the European powers, which, you know, in the 100 years since the end of the Safavid dynasty and the beginning of the Qajar dynasty, had clearly forged ahead. Or surpassed, you know, countries like Iran in their military capacity, in their economic capacity, in their administrative capacities. So we see in the reign of Fath Ali Shah, the British, you know, spending quite a lot of money in Iran, both to buy influence and to actually, you know, lend money to the Qajars to support them in some of what they wanted to do, and indeed, you know, to offer to send military experts and others to help them in training and upgrading their military. And the idea of that was, you know, essentially to make the Iranians both attached, sympathetic to the British, and more able to defend themselves should any other European power or indeed any other country, any other nation threaten the Iranians. So the British weren't doing it for the Iranians' sake, of course. They were doing it in order to look after their own interests.
And so could you tell us about the development of these relationships over the course of the Qajar period?
Yeah, it started at the period when Fath Ali Shah came in power, in exactly on 1801. 1801, the first envoy entered in Persia. First, say that formal envoy, the British sent, and the relation between Iran and Britain started, was officially, it was by sending Sir John Malcolm during the Qajar, during the Fath Ali Shah era, it started. And then this Sir Malcolm had some sort of his relation with our court, and the people in the court was to give them a large gift to attract them in that way. That was the ability of this guy. And also I should tell you that the Sir Malcolm was the first who brought the potato, introduced the potato, growing the potato in Persia, in Iran. And this relation gone further, which they realized that the Qajar dynasty are capable of being corrupted by gift and so on. And with that, they had access into the court, to administration, and gradually developed themselves into, to get control on the, say that, governmental affairs. And this went further when we reached to the end of the Qajar dynasty, and we noticed that the Britain is the major, major power inside our country, involving in banking, involving in media, involving in the, say that, our army, and decision on our border, future of Iran, and so on. Yes, it was they had a great, great involvement during that 140 years, especially from Fath Ali Shah period to the last of the Qajar.
Could you begin by telling us what motivated you to write your book about Sir John Malcolm, who was your ancestor and was a very prominent British diplomat to Iran during the beginning of the Qajar period?
He, in fact, he had no status there as a military man. He went as a diplomat, but he happened to be a soldier. And in 1810, when he was there, and only for a relatively short time, the Shah and Abbas Mirza said, "Well, you're a military man, you can help us in our battle with the Russians." And he said, "No, I can't do that because I'm only here as a diplomat." But he did give them a day or two's advice on how to deal with the Russians. But really, there's nothing much. It was only basically what he said, for what it's worth, is that you've got a wonderful irregular cavalry, and you should harass the Russians with your regular cavalry. But don't take them on in a set-piece battle, because you'll lose. That was his essential advice.
It was an interesting interview. He didn't give away much in the way of answers that we were looking for. He was almost, you know, military-like in the efficiency with which he answered his questions. He gave nothing away and almost whitewashed Britain's role in Persia during the Qajar period. So I think we're going to have to go further afield for the answers that we're looking for.